Boy, what a wild week, though, huh? Lots of things going on in the news, finances, financial markets around the world, presidential race, lots of events happening in our world right now. Things seem to be heating up again with North Korea and, of course, as Raul mentioned, with Iran, and just lots of things going on in the world. It gives us a lot of time to contemplate. You know, we celebrated a couple feast days already this fall, right? The Holy Day, the Feast of Trumpets. We talked about God's judgment. We talked about the wrath of God that comes on the earth. And while it's such a great time for us, such a time to be looking forward to the return of Jesus Christ. And as he said, you know, when all the trouble happens and everybody's scared, he said, lift up your head because your redemption's near. And we talked about the Day of Atonement, the time of removal of sin, the time of getting things away. But it kind of sets up these next feast days we're going to be keeping, these Feast of Tabernacles days, 7 days, and then the eighth day is another holy day. You know, one of the amazing things about the feasts that they do each year, and the reason I believe that God commanded feasts to be kept, and we see his disciples keeping it, and Jesus keeping it, and teaching on the feast, is that they get you to think about what is real, so that you can distinguish between truth and falsehood, and between what is eternal and what is temporary. And one of the symbols and things about the Feast of Tabernacles is that you go and dwell in booths, in tabernacles. You go and set up a tent. It's a time of tenting or tabernacling. Now we can think about the time when Jesus came and he tabernacled among us, as it says in John chapter 1, how he came and dwelt among us. But one of the things that the whole process of tabernacling and what God had the Israelites do was to make these take these boughs and these branches, these living things, and to make them into a booth to sit under, is that it was bound to decay. It was bound to go away. And as you know, if you've ever taken a vegetation and you've left it out, sitting out, not attached anymore to the vine or to the branch or the tree that it came from, after about 7-8 days, it's pretty dead. Well, the thing is, God is wanting us to get a lesson in this about what is real and eternal, about what is temporary, and understand the difference between the two. And so many times we miss the points that God is making because we get so focused on the temporary things of life. We get so focused on the day-to-day. We get so focused on the things that are part of this life that we miss out on the eternal things. On Proverbs 23 and verse 7, God says a very interesting thing. He says, as a man thinks in his heart, so is he. As a man thinks in his heart, so is he. To realize that the things that are in your heart, the things that are in your mind, are going to affect the kind of person you are. The things that you fill your mind with, it's what's going to make you the person you are. I want you to think about this in light of the world, because we live in the most advertising time in the history of mankind, right? It's just overload, right? You drive down in your car, you think you're going to be alone. No, there's billboards everywhere. You turn on the radio, there's advertisements everywhere. You go into our home to watch the news, and you're going to watch 10 minutes of commercials. You turn on anything, you're being advertised to, marketed to, being told what to think, what to reason, what to believe. You're being told what's important. So if we are being bombarded with thoughts, if we're being bombarded with marketing, with ideas, and people are saying, this is what's important, buy our car. This is what you deserve. You deserve a break today, right? This is what you should have in life. If you want to keep up, you need one of these. You've got to have this. You need that. Oh, what's over here? Always bombarding you with what is important, what you need to have, what you should have, that this will make your life different, that this will make you happy. You get a people that are consumed with consuming. We've been trained how to think. We've been trained how to act. Because as a man thinks in his heart, so is he. Advertising works. Good advertising, bad advertising, it works. You know why we come here? to think on good things. We're being marketed to, you could say, in a sense, by God, right? God is teaching us the right ways. Here is the problem. Here's what's essential about the differences. And one of the lessons we should be thinking about this time of year is who or what do we allow to influence our thoughts, our ideals, our beliefs, our practices? Who are we allowing to be the influencer of our lives? Because I will tell you this, if you don't think about this choice, if you don't think about what you take into your heart and into your mind, what you put before your eyes, I guarantee you this, you are going to walk in a deception of this world. Because it's being bombarded out there. This is a tougher choice than what's out there. Go out in the world, it's easy to get a message. They want you to think what they want you to think. They want you to value what they want you to value. We are in a war, a spiritual war between us and God on one side and principalities and powers and spiritual wickedness and high places on the other side, bombarding us all the time. I turned on the TV this week, just, you know, turning it on in the evening. I can't even repeat here. I'd be ashamed to repeat here what I heard within the first 10 seconds I turned that TV on this week. I was like, I can't believe I live in a world that this is what's on at 8:30 at night. Turned it right back off. This is ridiculous. It's offensive. It really is. And it's a message being portrayed to our kids. You wonder why we have so many sexual problems? Turn on any sitcom. I've done it twice in the last couple weeks, and I heard the same message. What was being advertised? And you wonder why we have so many issues with promiscuity and fornication and sexual immorality in this world. There's a huge amount of advertisement going on. It's like slime coming at you out of the television set. And you're like, no wonder our world is the way it is. Because if you are not being conscious of it, if you are not using the brain that God gave you, the heart and the mind and the ability to think and reason, you will be told what to think. And as a man thinks in his heart, so is he. Now let's turn back to the book of Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes is a book written by, who the Bible proclaims, the wisest man who ever lived. And what is so amazing about Solomon and his writings is God teaches us so much about the truth of life, of what is real and what is not. Now by tradition, this book, the book of Ecclesiastes, is read during the Feast of Tabernacles. It has pictures and portrays something about life that Tabernacles teaches us. And so as we get ready to celebrate the Feast of Tabernacles, I want to look at this. And it's so much in line with what we've been talking about already, what we think about. Notice here, Ecclesiastes chapter 1. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What a way to start a book, huh? Here's the big intro, guys. It's all meaningless. It's all nothing. It's all dust in the wind. It's all vanity. It's quite an intro to the book, isn't it? It's not a real grab you. I got to see what this is about. It's about nothing, okay? It's a show about nothing. It's a book about nothing. Everything and nothing. Now he starts to go through this. We're not going to read the whole book. Notice what he says here in verse 12. He said, I, the preacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem. I set my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven. This burdensome task God has given to the sons of man by which they may be exercised. I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and indeed all is vanity and a grasping for the wind. So here Solomon's saying, God gave me a task to search out what is real, what is meaningful on this earth. What is it? And think about all the different things you could do, all the things that you could search out. And he said, here's the task. This verse 15, what is crooked cannot be made straight, what is lacking cannot be numbered. Verse 16, so I communed with my heart saying, Look, I've attained greatness. I've gained more wisdom than all who were before me in Jerusalem. My heart has understood great wisdom and knowledge, and I set my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. And I perceive that this also is just a grasping for wind. For in much wisdom is much grief, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. Something to be said about that, isn't there? The more you know, right? The more you learn about what's going on in this world, the world in which we live, the more grief there is. But I want you to notice something that in the wisdom that God gives to Solomon, that he is thinking about life. Do you think about your life? Do you think about the things that you do? You know, one of the greatest challenges that we face as human beings is simply learning to think. I'm not saying that we don't think all the time, that our brains aren't working, our hearts aren't working, but to make conscious thought about what is valuable, what is true, what is real, what is important. Do you make time to commune with your own heart, to think, to practice thinking, to not just accept what somebody else is telling you, to not just accept what the world's message is, but to think on your own? You know, it used to be that people in the Christian church way back in the Middle Ages would say, don't think. Don't think. Just, we'll tell you what to think. Don't think. But you know, then God did an amazing thing. He developed ways that man could spread his word all around the world. And now we have the opportunity to go to one whose thoughts are higher than our thoughts, whose ways are higher than our ways, and we can ask him what he thinks about. We can think about what God thinks about. We can see the world the way God sees the world, and it gives us an opportunity to look at life completely different. You know, one of the biggest traps that we fall into as human beings is wanting to fit in. Wanting to conform. Wanting to be like everybody else. To know what's cool, what's hip. I gotta be trendy. I gotta know what's going on. You know, and there's a point, hey, I'm not saying don't be. Don't step in self. But if that's life for you, if this is what turns you on, it's just a waste of time. It's grabbing after something that's not there. It's grasping at the wind. It's trying to catch the wind, and it's never there. And God says, you're made for more than this. I have something great for you. But the only way that you're going to become the person I made you to be is if you take the time and make the effort to think about what is real, about what is true, and what is lasting. Ultimately, this is the message of Ecclesiastes, to think about something that matters, to think about life and what matters. And everything that we see in this world is against us doing this. Turn over to chapter 2 of Ecclesiastes and verse 3. Chapter 2, notice he says here again, I searched in my heart how to gratify my flesh with wine, while guiding my heart with wisdom, and how to lay hold on folly, till I might see what was good for the sons of men to do under heaven all the days of their lives. I made my great works. I built myself houses. I planted myself vineyards. I made myself gardens and orchards. And I planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made myself pools of water from which to water the growing trees of the grove. I acquired male and female servants and had servants born in my house. Yes, I had greater possessions of herds and flocks than all who were in Jerusalem before me. And I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the special treasures of kings and of provinces. I acquired male and female singers, the delights of the sons of men, and musical instruments of all kind. And I became great, and I excelled more than all who were before me in Jerusalem. And also my wisdom remained with me. He basically said, there's nothing I didn't try. There's nothing I didn't do. Think of whatever you could prize, a great garden, a great house, great businesses, great buildings, great anything of this world. I tried it all. I did it all. Notice he says in verse 10, whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. Whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure. So think about what he's telling us. From my heart, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my reward from all my labor. Then I looked on the works that my hands had done, and on the labor in which I had toiled, and indeed all was vanity and grasping for the wind. There was no profit under the sun. Where are the works of Solomon today? The works of these gardens, the buildings, the servants, the treasures. Where are the works that he did with his hands? Where are the pleasurable things that he experienced? It's all gone. It was all dust in the wind. The only things of Solomon that remain are the things that God spoke and breathed through him. I want you to think about that. The only things of Solomon that remain today are the things that God spoke and breathed through him. What we just read. The wisdom of Solomon is here. Because who gave him the wisdom? God did. And God, who gave him the gift, used the gift in a service of eternity. So here he is, having experienced everything that life seemingly can offer, and saying, whether it was bad things, whether it was good things, there was nothing that I kept from my heart. Whatever my heart desired, I tried it all. And it all meant nothing. It all led to nothing. It produced no profit. You know, sometimes we can fool ourselves into thinking, well, you know, the thing I'm chasing isn't drugs. It's not alcohol. We can think we're chasing after good things. But if the good things are just good things the way the world sees good things, like wealth and respectability and having a business and having the things of the world, and we don't have some eternal purpose and mindset in it, it's just as vain as the other. Whether it's good or evil, it all comes to nothing if God isn't in it. So we can deceive ourselves into thinking because what we do is good or honorable, because it's noble, that it's somehow better? Mm-mm. If God isn't the thrust of it, it doesn't mean anything. What does it say? Unless the Lord build the house, the weary builders toil in vain. You can go out to build the biggest church and have the most people. Guys, I'm serious. I do know from a business standpoint how we can fill this church to 5,000 people. I know how. I really do. I really can go that route. But I can't go that route. I have to rely on the Lord to build this house, because I can spend my time and we can get all energized to go get us to 5,000 people and have glorious facilities and glorious everything, and we can be weary building a house, and if the Lord isn't a part of it, what does it mean? And I'm telling you, you can look at all kinds of houses around this world that are being built in size and number, and I have to wonder if the Lord is building the house. So the question we ask ourselves is what we're doing coming from inspiration of God? Is what we're doing coming from the gifts that God has given us? Is what we're doing coming as a result of fellowship and meditation and practice with Him? I think I've told you the story before. God taught me this so powerfully when I began to minister and when He began to call me and put such a calling on my life. He sent me to a country far away, Argentina, never been outside the States before. Any one of you want a witness? My wife can testify. I had told her prior to the Lord sending me, I will never go to a country where I can't speak the language. So either I have to learn it or I'm not going. That's it. I'm not going to go and not speak the language. So where does God send me? To a country where I can't speak the language. Had to get a passport. Had to go down there. Didn't know where I was going. Didn't even know where Argentina, Buenos Aires, really was. I mean, I kind of had a general idea, but didn't know anything really about the area or city. Went there. Went to a church speaking completely different languages. I thought, what in the world am I doing here? I remember the first night after I got there, I went to some of the church services and everything was in Spanish. And I went back to my room that night and I was on the verge of tears. I'm like, God, am I just a fool to be here? Because I don't get it. And I don't understand what's to happen. And I don't know why I'm supposed to be here. Did I hear you or not? Am I following you or not? Because I don't see it. I woke up the next morning after having this time of prayer in the evening, and I thanked God for the day, and I said, whatever you want me to do, I know I'll learn something through this. You know, that day, I went in the morning, and my translator, the guy who had sat next to me the previous day, for some reason, he just started translating every word that was being said. And all of a sudden I realized, man, these are powerful messages. The power of God was in what I was hearing, and I was amazed at the things that were being said. And God was just doing some amazing things. And I realized there are some people that are desperately seeking God, that they didn't have the possessions that we had. They didn't have anything but God. You know, for them to have two or three changes of clothes, that was good, that was fine. Them to have food to eat, something to drink, and a little place to stay, that was great. Because a lot of them didn't even have that shelter. And going into the poverty and realizing the need for God that was there. But you know, as I saw it, you know what I wanted to do? I wanted to go tell everybody the message. You know what happened every time I tried to go out and tell people the message? Nothing happened. Nothing happened. I got frustrated. Every time we tried to make something happen, nothing happened. I'd say to the translator, hey, let's go here. We'll go do this. Let's go preach the gospel to these people. Mm-mm. Never went right. Never worked well. So I went back to the church. You know what I did? I just started praying. I started praying that God would open up the way. That God would make something happen if He wanted it to. And if not, I was just going to commune with God while I was there. Well, I was here for 7 days. I'll just commune with you. And you know what happened? Here I am praying. Somebody comes up and says, will you pray for me? Sure, pray for you. Would you like me to pray for you? Just a blessing from God. I prayed for that person. Started ministering them, talking to them about the Bible, things that were going on, because this church is different than the churches here. This church was open every day of the week. People just came in off the street. It was ministering right downtown Buenos Aires. So it's not, you know, the same setup here. So people would just come in, they'd ask you to start praying for. I was in that room for 8 hours straight praying for people and teaching people the Bible. I didn't have to go out and do anything. God brought them all in. They started coming, and I was there. Now, I didn't learn my lesson because the next morning I thought, I got to get out there and do something. Where are the people? Boy, wasn't that great yesterday? 8 hours of teaching God's Word. I mean, I'm filled. I love it. Yeah, people want to hear. I'm ready. Here I am. Nobody. Nobody. Totally got frustrated again. Why isn't this happening, God? What's wrong? What happened? So I just went back, sat down. It's kind of forlorn a little bit. The translator who had been with me, he could say I was down. So just pray about it. We start praying. And we're praying. And all of a sudden, this young 16-year-old girl walks up. She sees us praying. She said, would you guys pray for me? She said, I don't know who Jesus Christ is, and I don't have any relationship with God. And, you know, I see you guys praying, and you seem to have some happiness and joy I want, because I don't have it. And so we went to an area where they have some prayer rooms at this church, and we started praying for her. And once you know, as soon as that was done, somebody else came in, somebody else came in. We were there for 12 hours straight, praying for people, ministering to people in God's Word. So the thing is, as much as I tried in vain to struggle with things, that to make it happen, as much as I tried to build the house, the weary builder was toiling in vain. But when I didn't, and I looked to God to give me the strength, I was the available servant, but He had to make it happen. And He just brought people. It was bizarre. Still to this day, I look back and I'm like, it's just kind of strange how it all worked out. But that was God. And I believe He was teaching a lesson for me to use today. That He used when we started this little fellowship. that it will always be built. Now, it's our work and our efforts. He works through our works and our efforts, and He blesses them. I'm not saying we don't work and we don't do efforts, but we seek God to lead the effort and direct what we do and how we do it so that it is of His Spirit and of His building, that it's not in vain. And you can look at two churches that are doing all the same activities, and one gets it and one doesn't. Do you believe that? You can look at churches doing all the same activities, and one will get it and one doesn't. Two people can go to bed at night, get up, get showered, go to work. People see them at work. People see them drive home. People see them go to their homes again. Two people can look like they're doing the exact same thing, and one may be converted and one may not. Do you believe that? Two people can do the same things on this earth. Two people can plant a garden. One can be converted and one cannot. One can cherish it as the work of God. One can just cherish it as an exciting work. They can do the same things, but one gets it and one doesn't. Two people can build a business. Two people can both be successful in business. One doing it unto the Lord and one not. You can do the same physical activities, but it is the one who looks to the Lord in it that what is vain becomes eternal. When the things of vanity are translated into eternity, that is what we see in this book of Ecclesiastes. Everything is vain. But God can take of the vanity of life and make a permanency in us through the labor of it. Which is amazing. That He can do this. How? By what you think. As a man thinks in his heart, in his mind, so is he. Two people can do the same thing. One unto the Lord and one not. The one who does it unto the Lord can have something eternal worked out. The one who doesn't, even though it's the exact same work, it falls as dust because it hasn't been done to the Lord. It hasn't been done to His glory, for His honor, and realizing the great eternal purposes that are worked out within. So there is this struggle with vanity. Notice this in verse chapter 3 now. Actually, let's drop down. We're going to skip that. We're going to go over to Ecclesiastes chapter 7. Ecclesiastes chapter 7. It's a great book to read, by the way. It is such a study of life. Notice what it says here in verse 2 of chapter 7. Better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting, for that is the end of all men, and the living will take it to heart. And when you read that, those first two words, better to go to the house of mourning than the house of feasting. How many of you say, yeah, right on? Anybody? Oh, you had to do that. That was so low, Bill. Those of you who missed that on the internet, he said Cubs fans. That's just a really low blow right there. But the thing is, you don't say that. You don't say, I'd rather go to the funeral than I would to the celebration, right? It's not an enjoyable thing to do. But Solomon gives wisdom and he says, for that is the end of all men. The living will take it to heart. Basically, you know why it's better to go? Because if you're celebrating, you can get caught up in what this world has to offer. You can get boastful. You can get confident in thinking, yeah, we'll celebrate. And you won't think about the result of your life. You know, this is really what the economy has done right now. You know, George Bush, he said, hey, guess what? We had a great party down on Wall Street. Woohoo! Rolling in the money, rolling in the dough. And he said, right, Wall Street got drunk, and now the whole economy is in a hangover. Right? They were at the house of feasting, and they weren't thinking about where all this feasting leads. The fool never stops to think about what lies ahead. You weren't called to be fools. You were called to be the wise of God, to have the wisdom of God, to think about where life heads. You can't just go out and get drunk. You know what? Because it's leading the wrong place. You can't be out doing drugs and having immoral sex. It leads the wrong place. You can't just be living life for what this world offers. It doesn't lead anywhere. The man and woman of God stops to think about where is this leading. And the more you stop to think about, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? Does this add any benefit? Does this add any value? Is there anything eternal in this? Do you realize the more you do that in your life, the more things that truly don't matter and are such a waste of time will fall out of your life, and the more things of meaning and value will enter in. Because you realize it's just a total waste. Marty was speaking this morning about we're in training. We're in training, we're learning through trials. You know, it's a part of exercising your control. A part of exercising making no provision for the flesh to say, you know what, this is just a huge amount of wasted time in my life. It's worthless. It's providing no benefit. It's not encouraging me in my relationship with Christ. It's not benefiting my relationship with other people. I've got to get rid of it. I've got to sweep it away. It's not doing anything. What's awesome is when you find things in this world that are good, although vain, that you can take and use for something good and great that is being developed in yourself, in your relationship with God, and in your relationship with others. See, that is where it's really amazing what the things can be turned out by God, by looking to God in what you do. That's what it says in Colossians. Whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of Jesus Christ. That is a standard of life. You know, when Paul said to bring every thought into captivity to Christ, to bring it into the obedience captivity of Jesus Christ, that's a very high standard, isn't it? You know what that requires? Thinking about Him all the time. That the work you do it unto Christ. You do it unto God. You do this unto God. You love your wife unto God, or your husband unto God. You love your children unto God. You go to work unto God. You come to this worship service unto God. You serve at the men's breakfast unto God. Everything you do unto God, wherever it is, unto God. And your life will be a place of worship. And you will be the temple of the Holy Spirit. And wherever you go, you will know that the builder does not toil in vain. The builder toils for eternity. That is what is so amazing. Notice in verse 11 here, wisdom, chapter 7, verse 11 of Ecclesiastes, wisdom is good with an inheritance and profitable to those who see the sun. For wisdom is a defense as money is a defense. But the excellence of that knowledge is that wisdom gives life to those who have it. Now think about the work of God. For who can make straight what He's made crooked? In the day of prosperity, be joyful. But in the day of adversity, think. Because surely God has appointed the one as well as the other so that man can find out nothing that will come after him. How many of you heard about the man who, because of the finances, the note he left, that he killed himself, but he killed his whole, his family and his children this week because of the financial crisis? It's really something, isn't it? I was driving home from an appointment yesterday, and man, I was doom and gloom on the radio. I was listening to KFI on the way home, and just they're talking about the economy, and is this the end of the world? And the guy was saying, you know, I always wanted to be on the radio when the world ended, and this looks like it, and you know, things are just coming down, and everything's crashing. And you know, I was driving, and I looked out the sun, and I'm like, well, what's happening here hasn't affected the sun. The earth still seems to be going around okay. The sun came up, the sun went down. The earth is still producing crops. Animals are still living on the earth. And yet, this guy was talking about the world ending. The financial crisis. The money. What do you say here? Verse 12, wisdom is a defense as money is a defense. But you know, if money's your only defense in life, well, that's not going to help you very much. It's only as good as you believe it's good. And as long as other people believe it's good. You can think money's good all day long, but if nobody else does, it won't help you. can bring $1 million to the store. But if they don't think the currency has any value, what does it mean? The whole system is based on a system of faith. Our whole money system and financial system is based on a system of faith in something that is not reliable. I think about this. So if money is your defense, if this is your world, yeah, you're going to be crushed. But you know what he said here? He said, in the day of adversity, verse 14, think. God appoints the one as well as the other. Consider it. Think about it. What does it mean? Now let me tell you, this gets back to what we've been talking about in terms of how you're marketed to. Do you know why everybody's in a panic and in a crisis? Bad things have happened, right? People have betrayed trust. The party's been going on. Now there's a price to pay. Nobody likes the price to pay. Nobody likes the pain. We weren't embracing pain 5 years ago. Now the pain's been doubled. And now we've got to figure out what we're going to do. Right? Figuring out what we got to do. People willing to kill themselves and kill others because of what's happening. People panicking. People in fear. People in desperation. Because they believed that this money was what mattered. That possessions are what matter. That having all the luxuries of life is what matters. Really? Does it? Think about it. Does it really matter? I have a retirement account. If it all goes away, does it really matter? I think God's teaching me things about the ant and the sluggard and being wise and saving up for winter, you know, in the summer. It's right in the Proverbs. You should do it. It teaches you things of character that can help you and be a defense to you. But the reality is, what if it all goes away? Is that it? Is that the end of the world? But I'm alive. I know God. I have friends. I have family. My garden still produces tomatoes. You see? What is real? What is lasting? What is life about? If your whole world is in a crisis right now, you have to stop and consider, as it says here, in the day of adversity, what do I really value? Is this what's so important to me? Is this it? Is this what life is all about? Is this what I've been looking for? Because Solomon says, you know what, I have all the money. How much money does Solomon have on this earth now? It took him 14 years to build his house. 7 to build the temple of God. 14, right, to build the house. Where is that house? No more house. No more temple. Right? Spent all those years building a temple and a house. Where are they? They're gone. Long gone. Okay, so he says in chapter 1, verse 1 and 2, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Let's turn to the last chapter of Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes 12, and in verse 13 it says, so let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. What does he say? What is real? Fear God and keep His commandments. This is the whole duty of man. Fear God and keep His commandments. This is it. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether it's good or evil. Fear God and keep His commandments. In whatever you do and whatever you say, fear God and keep His commandments. The way you live in your home, the way you work, the things that you entertain yourself with, fear God and keep His commandments. What is it that you put your heart and mind on? Where is your affection set? What is it that you think about and desire in life? And what do you trust? You know, it's said back here in chapter 2 and verse 15 of Ecclesiastes. Chapter 2 and verse 15. He says this. Chapter 2 and verse 15 says, so I said in my heart, as it happens to the fool, it's going to happen to me. And why was I then more wise? Then I said in my heart, this also is vanity, for there is no more remembrance of the wise than there is fools forever. since all that now is will be forgotten in the days to come. And so how does a wise man die? He dies like a fool. Therefore, I hated life because the work that was done under the sun was distressing to me because it was all vanity and a grasping for the wind. I hated labor in which I toiled under the sun because I must leave it to the man who comes after me. And who knows whether he will be wise or a fool? Yet he will rule over all my labor in which I have toiled, in which I have shown myself wise under the sun. And this is also his vanity. So I turned, therefore I turned my heart in despair of all the labor in which I had toiled under the sun. I turned my heart and despaired of all the labor. Do you see? When you don't have God in the picture, when this is all there is to life, it's so meaningless. But now, turn with me to 2 Corinthians chapter 4. Because we have an amazing hope. We have an amazing hope of what God is doing through all this vanity, through all this life that He gives to us. 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 16. Solomon was saying, I look at life. I look at how whether you're wise or foolish, it doesn't matter because it's all gone anyway. That all the things that I labored for, all the things I built, all the things I worked for are gone just as much as if I had been a fool my whole life. And he said, so I look at it and I despair and like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what I do. But notice what Paul says. Chapter 4 of 2 Corinthians and verse 16. Therefore we do not lose heart. Even though our outward man is perishing, yet the inward man is being renewed day by day. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, is working for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. While we do not look at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporary, but the things which are not seen are eternal. Praise the Lord is right. You see, you can look at this and say it's all vain. If you don't see God, it is. You say, I put my whole hope in my finances and in my ability to manage this money and it's all gone now. Boom, I'll kill myself and kill my family. Because if your hope is there, you have no hope. Do you know what the days of adversity are meant to do by God? They're to get you to think. What is real? What is important? What should I be doing in my life? What are the things that mean something? Because prosperity often tends to bring you to forgetfulness. Forgetfulness of the promises. Forgetfulness from the one who provided the blessings in the first place. Our nation as a whole has become drunk with forgetfulness of the God who has made it great. And the tragedy is, they're still not pointing to Him in the midst of this. Fall down on your knees. You want to know how to get out of the mess, Congress? Fall down on your knees. Say, I don't know what to do. I don't want to vote for that. Will you bribe me? Will you give me some money? Let's turn a $700 billion bill into an $850 billion bill and we'll get something done. It's craziness. Let's borrow more. Let's spend more. You see how vile this is? Where is God in the midst of the problems? My friends, our country is showing more and more that in its tragedies, it is not falling on its knees, it is not being humbled, and it is not considering the God who made it. And this is very dangerous, a very dangerous sign of the times that we live in, at least for our society, that they're not doing that. And that the world as a whole is thinking they can solve this problem, they can figure out how to correct it. The whole problem is correctable right here. The answers are in God and in His Word. He's already told us how to be responsible, how to be wise, how to be just. It's already out there. But in the day of adversity, the question for us in this room is, will we turn and consider and think about what is happening and what means something? You can spend a whole lifetime pursuing that and treasuring that which means nothing. And in the day of calamity and destruction, when it's all gone, you'll be left with nothing. Don't ever let that be you. May your hope be in God, in the God who made you, in the God who loves you. Make Him the desire and the passion of your heart. Make Him the one that you're willing to give up time for, energy for. Make Him the one that you get up for in the morning and you stay up late at night for. Make Him the one that is worth pursuing. And that everything in your life would be found in a pursuit of Him. Let's turn to Deuteronomy chapter 14. We'll finish up here. Deuteronomy chapter 14. Deuteronomy chapter 14 and verse 22. You know, Jesus said when He was with His disciples, He said, don't worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow's going to be sufficient for itself. It's got its own worries. It's got its own problems. You don't know the future. But you do know the God of the present, the great I Am, who exists in you, with you, right now, here today. Don't worry about the future. Think about God, the present, the one who is omnipresent, always with you. And as Solomon went through, he said, vanity of vanities in the beginning, all is vanity. And then you know what he said? No, there is something that matters. To fear God and keep His commandments, it's the whole duty of man. It's everything. He started with vanity and he ended with purpose. Now in our lives, we all start in vanity. We all start as just skulls of mush, learning, being taught, being told what to think. Right? Being reasoned with. But as we grow, as we mature, we are to think. We are to ask questions. We are to consider. We are to ponder. It is a part of growing in the wisdom and in the knowledge and grace of our Lord Jesus Christ. Now notice the command that God gives in regard to the Feast of Tabernacles here, starting in chapter 14 of Deuteronomy and in verse 22. He said, you shall tithe of the increase of your grain that the field produces year by year, and you shall eat before the Lord your God in the place where He chooses to make His name abide, the tithe of your grain, of your new wine, your oil, of the firstborn, of your herds, your flocks. Why? Why does He want you to stop and think and consider? That you may learn to fear the Lord your God always. But if the journey is too long for you so that you're not able to carry the tithe, or if the place where the Lord God chooses to put His name is too far for you, then the Lord your God has blessed you, then you shall exchange it for money. Take the money in your hand and go to the place which the Lord your God chooses, and you shall spend that money for whatever your heart desires. For your oxen, sheep, for wine or similar drink, for whatever your heart desires, you shall eat there before the Lord your God, and you shall rejoice, you and your household. You shall spend that money for whatever your heart desires. It's an interesting command by God, isn't it? For whatever your heart desires. Whatever you want. What is it you want? You go to a feast. You think about the Israelites taking a tithe, the increase of their produce, going to a site, and if it's too far, He says, take it into money. And when you get there, spend it for whatever you want. What do you want? As you learn the fear of the Lord, what do you want? How will you use your time? How will you use your money? How will you use the blessings that God gives you? See, it's an amazing opportunity when you are given time, money, and the ability to spend it on whatever you want. It says a lot about your heart. It reveals all that's in it, right? Two ways to try a man, put him through tribulation or fill him with blessing. Because it tries the heart to see what is in it, what is the desire of it. We have lived in a nation where pretty much we could have the desires of our heart. We've learned how to spend less time at work and have more free time than man if we want it. We've learned how to acquire wealth and build homes and have vacations and properties and boats and RVs and things that people want. We've had time to acquire, to see what is our heart's desire. And the thing was, the heart's desire was never satisfied, was it? It always had to be more and more and more. Because man thinks that the things of this world, that if he attains enough of them and has enough of them, that they're going to bring satisfaction and happiness. And that is a lie. True happiness, true satisfaction is only found in the Lord our God. When He is our portion, when He is our hope, when our faith and confidence and trust is in Him, that things can be falling down around us, and yet we stand on the solid rock. The storms may wash the houses away that are built on sand, that are built on this world, that are built on materialism, but when we, who have built our homes on the rock of Jesus Christ, when the tragedies and the troubles and the adversity comes, we are not moved. Because we have made Him our desire. We have made Him the rock and the salvation of our lives, that we never be moved. And the thing is, through all these things that we see in the world, through all the adversities, through all the blessings, through whatever God gives, the day of joy and the day of adversity, we know that we find permanence in Him. And He works it out. All this light affliction is working in us an eternal weight of glory. So let's give Him glory. Let's give Him praise. Let us learn to fear the Lord our God. Make this feast of 8 days a celebration of giving your dedication and desire and time to Him. Make it a revival time in your own life by pursuing Him, by making Him the thing to feast on, making Him the thing that you're willing to spend your money and time for, and making that money and time be a service not just to God, but to everyone that you can. To have fellowship, to have encouragement, to give the gifts that God has given to you and to share them with others. So let's stand, let's sing, let's rejoice before God. Let's ask God to be with us.